Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, many of us here in Central New York were saddened to learn a week or two ago of the passing of Dr. Julius Richmond. Now, I know most of you are asking who Julius Richmond was. Fair question, because he hadn't been here in Syracuse since the early 1970s, although a good deal of his career and some of the major aspects of his career were spent right here in Syracuse. And when you hear more about what this man accomplished, you'll be very pleased you tuned in to HealthLink On Air this morning. To tell us more about Dr. Richmond's accomplishments and legacy, we have two guests this morning. Unfortunately, they weren't able to join us at the same time, so we're bringing you two separate conversations, but they add up to plenty. We're going to begin with Dr. Howard L. Weinberger, professor of pediatrics at SUNY Upstate, and one of Dr. Richmond's students. Good morning, Dr. Weinberger.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Richmond was a remarkable man, wasn't he?
He certainly was.
His death was reported in the New York Times. He was 91 when he died, and the description of his accomplishments was two columns long. But you were his student, weren't you?
Yes, I was. He first came to Syracuse, I believe, in 1953, and shortly thereafter, I started medical school. And so I spent my 4 years of medical school, a good share of that time was within the Department of Pediatrics, and he was the chair of pediatrics at the time.
And his philosophies were really quite different from what had been done to that point. Can you share this with us?
Yeah, I think that the way people thought mostly about illness in children at that time was very much disease-oriented. And I think what Dr. Richmond taught, at least taught me, was to think about every child developmentally. And so his philosophy was one of which we learned that children's diseases affected the family, affected the way the family responded to the child, and we learned about each child developmentally at every different stage. And that was really, I think, actually a breakthrough in the way we think about children's health and disease. At this time, it's self-evident, but at the time, it was quite unique.
People weren't thinking of it that way at all. And I do see there is a, when you talk about a legacy, there's really much a legacy of that thought that even now, isn't there? I know we've talked about the Golisona Children's Hospital. It influences that.
Absolutely, because we're talking about how to approach a child who is desperately ill in a hospital, but it affects their whole family. And so everything that's going to happen at the hospital will be family-oriented.
Well, talk to us about the times. You're talking about the 50s. You're talking about students who were, it was post-war. It was a time when many babies were being born. And I certainly have to think pediatricians were very, very busy at that time. But if I remember correctly, SUNY wasn't SUNY then. It was Upstate, but wasn't it part of Syracuse University?
Yeah, until about 1948, the medical school was part of Syracuse University. And the State University took it over and started building the medical center as a medical center under the leadership of Dr. Carlisle Jacobson. And Dr. Richmond was actually the first full-time chair of the Department of Pediatrics. Uh-huh. Until that time, people in the community, physicians in the community, wore two hats. They were clinicians and they were also teachers at the medical center. We still have a number of teachers who work in the community, but until that time, there weren't very many full-time faculty. In fact, I think there were two or three full-time faculty in the department when Dr. Richmond came. So he basically built the Department of Pediatrics.
Very interesting. He wore two hats because he was also, you could almost call him a community activist as well, couldn't you? I mean, he wasn't afraid of a little controversy.
It's interesting. We didn't think of him that way. At least I didn't think of him that way because I thought of him as a very reserved, conservative person. Mm-hmm. But he was really a very, not only thoughtful, but very innovative person.
And so, proactive.
So when you're thinking about the whole influence on Head Start, which really began in his observations with others about the fact that children's development was so significant. So you're right, he really was innovative. I'm not sure I saw that as being controversial. In retrospect, it appears much more controversial than it was at the time,
I
think.
There you go. Well, I know he and Dr. Betty Caldwell worked together, and they built Head Start in Syracuse to begin with. And I read recently that it was almost illegal to have children who were in school-like settings before they were really ready for kindergarten.
Well, the theory, which wasn't a bad theory, is that children needed their parents, usually their mothers, to care for them until they went to school. And yet we saw, clinically, we saw lots of children, particularly from low-income families, who were forced into daycare settings because the parents had to work.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the daycare settings were less than optimum. Mm-hmm. Certainly they weren't state-run or state-supervised. And so what Drs. Richman and Dr. Caldwell talked about was trying to develop a model in which we would provide a high-quality daycare and medical services to a group of children who otherwise would have had to be in daycare anyway.
Sure.
Just to prove that it wasn't detrimental to them. They had to prove that it wasn't detrimental to be in daycare, which, that, looking back 50 years or 40 years, it seems crazy, but that's what they had to prove.
Isn't that an amazing thing? And really, it turns out to have been a huge boon for these children, wasn't it?
It certainly was. And I think even now, I still don't know how Lyndon Johnson or the people in Washington got wind of this project. I think Dr. Richman probably had many contacts that we didn't know about in the bureaucracy in Washington and the children. Then it was called the Children's Bureau. And so people knew about what he was doing. And then from there, he was invited to help develop Head Start.
That's great. Well, Dr. Weinberg, thank you so much for coming by this morning to talk to us about your experience with Dr. Richman.
It's my pleasure. It's a sad day for me because, as I said, he was not only my student, but he also recruited me back on the faculty, and I've been here ever since.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
And now we have in the studio Dr. Thomas Welsh, professor and chair of the Pediatrics Department at Upstate. Regular listeners know he's a frequent guest. Good morning, Dr. Welsh.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Talk to me a little bit about the legacy of Dr. Richmond.
Well, I think there are two components to his legacy. The first would be his legacy in Syracuse, and it was really Dr. Richmond that elevated pediatrics in Syracuse to a real academic specialty. There had always been pediatric activity in Syracuse and in the medical school, but with the arrival of Dr. Richmond and his tenure here, the department was really built up to the type of stature that it eventually received today. Dr. Richmond really laid the groundwork for Dr. Oskey, who was the chair who followed him, who further developed the department. So in Syracuse, I think his legacy is a strong pediatric department.
And may I just say that part of that legacy becomes then the understanding now that children are not just small adults, which you and I have talked about before. Building that pediatrics as a separate form of specialty, addressing children and children's needs because they are not just small adults.
Absolutely. Pediatrics was really a very small part of the medical school and of medical practice in the community. And Dr. Richman really set us on the pathway to making it a full-fledged specialty and recognizing child health care as a really special area of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I think his real legacy, though, actually came after he left Syracuse and much of the work that he did. We've talked previously about Head Start and the enormous impact that Head Start has had on children of poverty in the United States.
Right.
The concept of Head Start really started when Dr. Richmond was in Syracuse. But even more broadly, his legacy, in my opinion, was etched when he became Surgeon General of the United States. Until his time, the position of Surgeon General was really sort of a ceremonial type of function. Its duties were not clearly outlined. But Dr. Richmond really took the lead as becoming the chief health educator of the United States and took on some extremely important issues when he was the Surgeon General. We have, obviously, his continuing role in Head Start was important, but he was really the first major public figure to take on the tobacco industry.
Which, of course, became huge.
Absolutely, and he really laid the groundwork for that.
And all the more interesting, I think, because it was under President Carter, who was a Southerner.
Absolutely. I think we fail to appreciate in those days the power of the tobacco companies. For a public servant working under a Southern president to take on this huge industry was something that today I don't think we realize how courageous that was on his part, and the fact that the president continued to support him and keep
Absolutely.
Him in that office.
And I lived in the South during the time, and it was huge. And I lived right in the heart of tobacco country at the time in North Carolina. And Dr. Richman was pretty much persona non grata as far as they were concerned.
Oh, I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was. And secondhand smoke, which we still talk about today, he was really one of the first people in the healthcare industry to raise the issue of secondhand
really?
Smoke.
Really? Interesting.
The other thing I think typifies the type of person Dr. Richman was, in 1979, as Surgeon General, he took on two positions that in those days must have been looked upon as really incredible that a public figure would do this. First of all, he took on the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which had a policy forbidding gay people to enter the United States.
Really?
And he said, as Surgeon General, that this was not an illness, that he was not going to countenance this, and basically overrode the position of the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Very interesting.
And, you know, at that point, there was no major public advocacy, public constituency for gay people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if he was responding to public pressure. He simply did this because he thought it was right.
And we really weren't even using the term gay at
Absolutely
that point.
Absolutely not.
Right.
No. And along the same lines, at the same time, he came out in favor of the medical use of marijuana.
Uh-huh.
So this is an individual who, in many respects, was ahead of his time, was courageous, and frankly, would probably not survive as Surgeon General today.
Maybe not. He would have been too much of a lightning rod, wouldn't he?
I suspect.
Very good. Well, Dr. Thomas Welsh, you've been great. This is interesting to go behind the scenes, look back through our history, things we don't know about, and we appreciate your telling us about the legacy of Dr. Julius Richmond.
Thanks.
And listeners, we need to take a break. Please do stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is SUNY Upstate's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.